Illegally Deaf is a podcast about overcoming obstacles. I'm Danny Burnside, and just this year, I was diagnosed with severe hearing loss. Oh, did I mention I'm a professional Hollywood voice actor? Funny how that goes. I've made the decision to own my disability and interview remarkable guests who are thriving in light of being disabled. Welcome to the Illegally Deaf Podcast. Hey, Chris, how you doing, brother?
Doing great. How are you today?
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me on the show.
It is my pleasure and honor. And if I'm being perfectly honest, which I always am, there's nothing I'd rather be doing.
Now, you know that this is a sports talk radio podcast, right?
Oh, hang on a second. Let me change my filter.
Okay, good looking out.
Danny, it's good to be with you today.
ladies and gentlemen, Chris Rossetti is a professional voice actor, and I mean this honestly, one of the most genuine individuals I've ever met in my entire life. Chris, it's an honor to have you, sir.
Well, it's an honor to be here, and thank you for dropping the restraining order.
Guys, just to give you an example of the type of caliber of person Chris is, on his Instagram page, the only pinned post is a crisis hotline phone number. The only pinned post. Now, most people, now I'll call myself out here, their pinned posts are self-serving. I think my pinned post is like me on a red carpet or something. A lot of other people's, it's a vanity picture of them where they think they look the most attractive out of all the pictures they have in their phone, right? Chris's only pinned post is a crisis hotline phone number. You're really a remarkable person, Chris.
I'm sorry, can I call my wife in the room so she can hear this?
Well, we're going to record it anyway. We can play back the text for her.
She doesn't follow me on social media.
Hilarious. You can't even get your wife to follow you.
Well, you know, let me just say this about the pinged post. I have to let you know behind the scenes, that is my voice on the...
Is it? Wow, so cool. Okay, that's getting a like for sure.
Well, I'm just saying it's a little less sainthood like of me. Also, it was a school project, so I want to just make that clear.
Okay, scratch that. Take two. Chris's only pinned post is 100% vanity.
That's right. Follow me on all social media platforms.
Okay, well, it's a little bit of both, but nonetheless, I think that's very admirable and very cool for our listeners. If you want to hear an example of Chris's voice, check out his only pinned post, and that is his voice. More importantly than any gig that either one of us will ever book is the crisis hotline phone number. I just think that's really cool that you did that.
Well, they gave us the option in this class. It was a beginning video editing class that I took. So they gave us the option of doing whatever we wanted. And so I said, well, what's near and dear to my heart? And it was my deliverance, my freedom from 30 years of depression. And immediately, you know how sometimes when you do editing, you have a track, a supplemental track running through your mind. It may not be the thing you use later, but the track that kept running through my mind was that song, Like a Bridge Over Troubled Water.
Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah. And so that track just kept pounding my brain as I was coming up with the images and so forth. Royalty free, by the way, I'm cheap. I did really just feel like, you know, that track that's been motivating me through this depression posting I'm doing here, whatever you want to call it, anti-depression, it might as well be the main feature.
So I always joke when I'm hanging out with Chris or amongst other people, and I always say, you know, hailing from San Francisco, or our on-site representative live from San Francisco. Take us back 30 years ago when you embarked on this journey of depression, for lack of a better term. Were you also living in the Bay Area at this time? Take us back to what led to you falling into a state of depression.
Well, I'll give you not the elevator pitch version. You know, that's too short, but I won't give you the War and Peace version either. I will compress it for you. So when I was a teenager, I kind of succumbed to depression. And I say succumbed, meaning there was no clinical diagnosis. There was no medical diagnosis. It was just, that boy is weird. And that started when I was a teenager. And it came and grew out of my blaming myself for everything that went wrong as a child. Parents break up, hear them arguing at night, laying in bed, telling myself it's all my fault, it's all my fault, which of course it wasn't. I'm sure I had something to do with something. But then breaking up, the marriage breaking up, was not all my fault. But I internalized everything as a child. And so I think it started young and then went into the teen years and lasted for 30 years. And that began, if you will, in Florida when I was a teenager. And it continued on through adulthood until 21 years ago. So just time block, pressed for 30 years, delivered from that depression for 21 years now.
So the show, Illegally Deaf Podcast, yes, it's a show about my journey of hearing loss. Really what the show is about is overcoming obstacles. Really what the show is about is mental health. Because isn't overcoming obstacles mental health? I would say that's under the umbrella of mental health. What led you to be able to begin to overcome this depression?
Well, I had tried several things, and one of the best counseling advices I ever got was from someone who told me, well, go see a doctor, you know, go see someone trained to deal with this sort of thing. And I recommend that to everybody. Whenever somebody asks me, what should I do? I give them the same 4, 5, 6 points that they should try. And one of them includes go get diagnosed. Don't be ashamed of it. Talk to your friends, bring it out in the open, talk to people you trust, and go find out what's causing it. You know, I mean, how can you fight something you don't know what the cause is? So the first thing I did was go to get diagnosed by a trained professional in our town in Florida. And I walked into his office and he saw me. I was his last appointment of the day and I'd never met the man before. And I sat down and he said, all right, what's going on? And I talked to him briefly, gave him the high points and low points. And then he said, all right, well, that's enough for today. Here's a prescription to settle you down and to numb you. And I said, I don't want to be numbed, doc. I want to be cured. I want to be delivered from this situation. And trust me, if medication works for you, please take it. Please don't stop without your doctor's advice. But in my case, with this first visit, I thought it was kind of presumptive to say to me, just take this so you'll be numb. I didn't want to go to the numb route. I wanted to go the healed route.
It's kind of USA healthcare in a nutshell, isn't it? I mean, a little bit.
Know, I said to him, I can't take this. I don't. How can you diagnose me after meeting me for 10, 15 minutes?
Right.
How can you say take this? He didn't ask me a question related to my medical condition. Anyway, he looked at me and he said these words, Danny. He said, I take this medication. He said, do you think I can listen to people like you all day and not need something myself?
That's hilarious. That's a sketch right there.
I walked out of the office. And I'm just saying that that's one of the steps I took. It didn't quite work out the way I thought it was.
Is that a Far Side comic or did that really happen?
Dude, that really happened. Everything I tell you is true unless my wife tells you otherwise. No, that really happened, man. It was bizarro. So I left that office and continued on a journey of, you know, like I said, 30 years of trying to break this thing myself, trying to say, come on, you're better than this. You know, pick yourself up by your bootstraps. Watch a John Wayne movie. What's the matter? You know, that'll man up. You know, all these kind of things. Mm-hmm. You know, I tried everything until one day it finally left. And I like to say it left in 30 seconds.
How does that happen? How does one day you just wake up and it's gone?
Well, here's the way it happened. And I'm telling you how it happened because I was there. At the time, I was working for a company, startup company here in San Francisco. My wife and I, we had been evicted from the place we were living in. I don't know if you know about housing in San Francisco.
Really cheap and affordable overall, right?
Yeah, we're all very extremely wealthy here. But it was tough. So I said to my wife, take our kids, go back east, stay there with the in-laws, you know, around the holidays, and let me just keep working here, and I'll try to find a place for us to live, and I'll have you come back as soon as I can. I thought this would last a couple weeks. Danny, this went on, I think it was for 6 to 9 months. I've kind of blocked the time out of my brain because it was such a weird time in our lives.
You were separated now, from your kids for that length of time?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and my wife.
Wow, yeah, right.
I would go back and forth to the East Coast and try to see them as much as I could afford to. But this is back when, by the way, airfares were sometimes 99 cents one way. Wow. 99 cents. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Orville and Wilbur Wright picked me up in the plane. Finally, I was getting ready to leave to go see them because I was missing them so desperately. And I just was praying, actually, and asking, you know, what should I do, God? And by the way, I talked to God, if that's okay. And in my mind, I didn't hear a voice out loud, but in my mind, I heard, don't go back anymore. They're going to come back to you. And so I said, okay. And it got worse. The depression was worse. So picture this. Your family's 3,000 miles away, sleeping sometimes in the vehicle. I'm sleeping sometimes on people's couches, which is no big deal. People do that all the time. I'm sleeping in the office under my desk, right? Washing up in the sink in the break area. I'm doing everything I can to just keep going. And the depression was so severe. So finally, the end of the story is this. My boss and my pastor and my employer and my friend comes to me and says, hey, we're all going away to Asilomar, California, near Monterey. And the whole company's going down there for a retreat with our families. And I said, I'm not going. He says, why not? I said, I'm not happy. I don't want to be down there without my family. And he said, no, it's going to be okay. And I got up to leave and just, you know, ignore him. And I just felt that same spirit of God. I call it spirit of God, talk to me and say, shut up. He's not talking to you. He's talking to the spirit of depression. And Danny, I stopped and I let him encourage me. And then I said, well, then you're going to have to pray for me because I don't know what to do. Hmm. He prayed for me in 30 seconds and my shoulders literally lifted up. You know, the expression, I felt the weight of the world lift off of my shoulders. no lightning, no thunder, no voices, no shaking, no dramatic, nothing. And I said to him, it's gone.
Wow.
And he said, what's gone? Because he wasn't even putting together a, you know, do this and do that kind of prayer. He was just saying, you know, help Chris and encourage him, God. And I said, it's gone. I physically felt it leave. So that was amazing, man.
Chris, you mentioned that your parents were divorced. If you're comfortable sharing, did you have a traumatic childhood outside of the divorce?
No, that's the amazing thing. They came to me when I was a little boy, and we were living in Miami, and they came to me and said, Mommy and Daddy are going to separate and be divorced. They explained it to me as they could to a five-year-old or however old I was. And I blew a gasket. I started crying and, you know, I said, no. And they stayed together, and they tried to keep the marriage together. So when they came to me later, when I was a teenager, and said, you know, now we're finally splitting up, I was headed out the door already. You know what I mean? And I said, okay, fine. You know, that kind of thing. But the childhood, no, was not traumatic. My parents both loved me separately and equally. So I never have blamed it or pinned it on my parents and their marriage or anything else that went on, because they loved me unconditionally. That was an amazing thing. I actually think, as I said in the beginning of this conversation, I think I internalized things that I had no business internalizing.
That's fair. I think we're all guilty of that to some degree. You know, relapse is a part of recovery. So did you relapse back into depression since that day?
I have not. And I'll say that with this caveat. I'm a human being. I don't know if you've noticed, Danny.
I had a suspicion.
After I was delivered from that depression, I say delivered from depression with all confidence and all assurity, because the thoughts of suicide went away. The thoughts of I'm not worthy. The moments of looking in the mirror in the morning and saying, I hate you, to myself.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
The thoughts and the actions of a truly depressed and oppressed individual. The thoughts of I can't make it. Nobody loves me. Nobody cares. That all died that day. Now, I'm human. And of course, I have emotions. We all have emotions. Do you know we're allowed to be angry and anger? And you know, we're allowed to have emotions and even down times, okay? So to say I've never had a down moment and I'm this, you know, hippie, yippie, yappy, happy guy, no, of course not. I'm a human. But that depression that would drive me to consider and contemplate suicide and on, that stopped and has never returned.
I'm glad you mentioned that about a kind of a public persona and a private persona. All of us have our round midnight. There's an old jazz standard literally titled Round Midnight. It begins to tell round midnight. We all have those midnight thoughts, every single one of us. If anyone tells you they're confident 24/7, run, don't walk, because they're lying to your face. It sounds like you really had a mindset change that day, and you've been able to carry that forward since that time.
Totally. There's an old expression I like. It's simplistic, and I probably am getting it wrong. I like it. And it's something like this. You cannot stop the birds from flying over your head, but you can stop them from building a nest in your hair.
So how about the poop? Can you stop that from landing on your head?
Well, in some locations. But that's why I say that thought process changed, as you just mentioned. But also, when the thoughts come my way, I've learned to discern, is this thought worthy of my possession? Am I going to be better, beneficial? Is someone going to be benefiting from me thinking like this? And very quickly, I recognize it. For example, one day I was sitting in our home. And by the way, after my depression deliverance, if you will, my family came back from the East Coast. And we were supplied with a home to live rent-free for a year and a half right by the beach just south of San Francisco. So miracles do happen. Not everything is terrible and hard. And during the time living in that home, I've sensed that spirit of depression trying to get a hold of me. You know what I mean? Like you said, nobody is 24 hours safe from evil thoughts or bad thoughts or depressive thoughts. And I recognized what it was. And it was kind of funny, Danny, because I got up and I opened the front door and then I yelled, get out. And I slammed the door. My family came running in the living room and he said, Dad, what was it? I said, oh, nothing. I was just telling depression to get lost. So I think you recognize, I've never smoked, but sometimes people say ex-smokers hate the smell of smoke. I hate the smell of depression. I hate the very thought of it.
That's awesome. When a negative thought creeps in, you question yourself, does this thought serve me? And if the answer is no, you just move on and let it go.
You got to, you know.
That's wise. So, Chris, you also faced another challenge in your life, and that is the challenge of some mobility struggles. what's your story as far as mobility struggles are concerned?
How long is this interview? How many days do we have?
About 3 days. 3 days. We got plenty of time. 72 hours.
Good. Good. Let's get to our credit scores eventually. I noticed several years ago, I'm going to say, oh boy, now 15 years ago, I noticed a tiny bit of numbness in the pinky toe. I was swimming and I got out of the pool and I was changing in the locker room at 24-hour fitness. And I noticed my little pinky toe had just a little bit of numbness. And I thought, huh. Or as Tim the Toolman Taylor used to say, huh. I wondered, what is that, you know, numbness there? And it kind of grew to the second toe and so forth. And slowly but surely, I just noticed more numbness and issues. Anyway, I've had back issues since I was a teenager. I hurt my back when I was about 17. And they wanted to do surgery way back in 1975, 74. They wanted to do surgery on my back. And my mom, who was a nurse's age, she said, no, they're not cutting you open. And I thank God, because back in the day when I had back surgeries, it was really brutal. But I've always had back problems and back issues. So it got worse and worse and worse. The time came, Danny, when finally my wife very kindly said to me, suggested to me, maybe you should get a cane. And I was like, what are you talking about? You know, just this whole thing. So I finally succumbed. Sorry, give me a, just get a cane, you know. And then it came down to, okay, the issue kept proceeding. And I kept having problems with balance and things like that. Maybe we should get a temporary handicap placard. What are you talking about? And I said, okay, well, maybe you should turn that into a permanent handicap placard. Anyway, I just went through these stages of denial. And all the while, my back issues and nerve and feet, and these things were getting worse and worse and worse. I did go to doctors and was diagnosed with several things. Till finally, I really can't stand or walk more than 5 minutes without losing all feeling. It became a real issue of mobility. I heard that sometimes insurance coverage helps you with things like this. So I applied and was approved to get a mobility scooter. You know, like you see the old people riding around, you know. I went ahead and got that, and then I kept it in the house for a week and just stared at it. So ashamed and embarrassed to think a grown man like me would, you know, have to do this. Danny, can I tell you an interesting thing about the scooter?
Please.
I saw a man going down the street where I live before I had a scooter, before I had issues, and he was riding a scooter on the sidewalk. And I thought, oh, that poor man. Oh, thank God I'm not like that. Mm. And I thought, oh, thank God I don't have to do that. Please, God, don't ever let me have to do that. That little passing thought, man, taught me a lesson in life. Well, taught me several lessons in life. One being, except for the grace of God, there go I sometimes. But also, as someone put it one time, I heard in an interview about depression, disabilities, they said, all of us, if we're not now, will eventually be disabled. Mm-hmm. All of us, eventually in our lives, are going to need help. So get over yourselves and get help.
What a beautiful word for this podcast, Chris. That is perfect. It's like we planned that. Seriously, that is, all of us eventually will be disabled. Many of us, myself included, and many of our listeners are currently disabled, but everyone will follow suit. Beautiful word for this podcast, Chris. How perfect.
I wish it had originated with me and was pinned on my posts, but it came from someone else, very wise. And so I got the scooter, Danny, and I, for a week, stared at it, as I said, and I didn't want to get on it because I was embarrassed. And then finally, you know, I was like, it's either that or stay in the apartment and don't go out. And so I got on that scooter and I went outside, very self-conscious about it. But you know what I decided? I'm going to be the craziest, funnest, weirdest, most adventurous scooter man in the city of San Francisco. And I haven't looked back since. I pull up to people in San Francisco when they're standing on the sidewalks outside restaurants. And I go, did you call for Uber? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, hop on.
Hilarious. You've heard of the famous tree man of San Francisco. Chris is the famous scooter man of San Francisco.
And that has enabled me to get to the swimming pool.
Cool.
That's enabled me to go back to college.
Cool.
That's enabled me to have mobility again. So I say, you know, by whatever means possible, man, don't stop. Keep moving.
So you didn't fall back into any depression when you had to rely on the scooter? You were able to just kind of mentally own that?
I had to. I believe in prayer, obviously. I just told you about an experience where I was delivered from depression, right? I believe in the power of prayer. I believe in the power of medical treatment. I believe in the power of things just happening and falling your way. And I believe in the power of God. And I believe in whatever you want to say. I believe I've experienced all those things. But until that day, I'm going to keep moving. So once again, going back to accepting things or not accepting things or thinking about things or not thinking about things, I've chosen to think about the scooter as being my ticket to mobility in the future. I want to say this about our school, our local college here, Community College, City College of San Francisco. They are so supportive with mobility issues. They have an entire department called DSPS, Disabled Students and the Services. And they take care of people with not just mobility issues, but all kinds of mobility issues. And I'm so grateful that I live in a great city and have a great school to go to. And not only do they not care that I'm in my 60s and I'm pretending to be a student, but they also help people with all kinds of disabilities. They accommodate everybody, and everybody's so kind.
You know, Chris, I don't think I ever told you, but my uncle was a quadriplegic. He passed away a couple of years ago. And no, he became a quadriplegic when he was around 29 years old. Due to a misoperation. He had a collapsed lung. He'd served in the military. He had a collapsed lung, and the operation was going to be covered by the VA hospital. And unfortunately, the primary doctor, the head surgeon, was not available. And as my grandpa told the story, him and my grandma were in the lobby and on the overhead speaker a number of times, the receptionist or the head nurse was calling for that head surgeon. I don't know his name off the top of my head. If it happened to be Jackson, you know, Mr. Jackson, report to, you know, Sweet Pea, Mr. Jackson, number of times. Mr. Jackson never showed up. So an intern performed the surgery on his collapsed lung and severed his spinal cord. And from that day, 29 years old on, my uncle was a quadriplegic. So I grew up only knowing my uncle in a wheelchair, me and my brother and my sister. I never knew him when he had the ability to walk. I don't know if that gave me a sympathy or an empathy for disabled individuals from an early age. I just became disabled, but I've always had disabled members of my family. I never told you that, Chris.
Wow.
He was a remarkable man. He was, I think, you know, maybe that's why I have such respect for those who overcome their obstacles. He overcame his obstacles. He was a remarkable man. He didn't wallow in self-pity. He kicked butt. He accomplished things. I'm glad I could tell that story. You know, this just kind of came out organically. Thank you for letting me tell that.
That is amazing, Danny. And so you knew him as a human being, a person with personality and goals and drives and ambitions, and you did not know him as a disabled person. You knew him as your uncle.
I knew him as a human being. Yeah. Beautifully said, Chris. Beautifully said. Chris, you have a moniker that you often use, Free to Laugh Now. Matter of fact, your Twitter handle is Free to Laugh Now. What is Free to Laugh Now?
Well, when I first started going onto social media, and by the way, I did not want to go on social media for years. As a matter of fact, I never wanted to turn on a computer. It wasn't until 95 when I turned on my first computer, much to my chagrin and regret to this day. But anyway, I turned on a computer for the first time in 95. And several years ago, someone said to me, you need to start broadcasting and telling your story about deliverance and freedom from depression and about other things. And you need to share your story. You're a communicator and so forth. And I said, I don't want to do that. And I said, all I have is a flip phone that someone gave me. You know, I've never bought a phone even. And I just use a flip phone. They said, well, I'm going to buy you an iPhone. And I said, no, I don't want to do this. And they said, you're meeting me at the Apple store. And Danny, they bought me my first iPhone.
Wow.
And they said, you're going on the air. I don't know how, but you're going to broadcast. And you need to share the good news with people. And I said, oh, so I went kicking and screaming. And I thought, well, what do I call myself? What do I do? What do I say? And I don't know where it came from. It came out of nowhere, Free to Laugh Now. The idea was, I was always, during the 30 years of depression, I was always active. I wasn't like just sitting in a cave being depressed. I was a minister, Danny. I would travel the country, and I was like an itinerant preacher. And I would go around and preach, and I would teach, and I would run youth camps or help run youth camps for a while. I did all kinds of things. I was an assistant pastor. I was a salesman. It was a secular job. I was a salesman. I had to be gregarious and carry on. So I was active, just that I was depressed all the time, but I was hiding it very well. And I was funny. I was always funny. It just came natural to me to be funny. But when I was set free from that depressive mode of depression, I thought, no, now I'm really free to laugh now.
I love the now part of that. Free to laugh now. It's ownership.
That's where that came from. I found out later, just as I got a website, which, by the way, I hardly use, but just as I got a website.
What's the website? Is it Free to Laugh Now?
It's Free to Laugh Now, but
freetolaughnow.com?
Yeah, but I very rarely visit it myself, so I don't expect anybody to go there because I don't go there. But you can always reach me at freetolaughnow.com or freetolaughnow@gmail.com. Once I got that website, I discovered after I got it that somebody else had something out there called Free to Laugh Now, DVDs and so forth. And it turned out to be a Christian comedian. And I contacted him and I said, hey, I just got this website, Free to Laugh Now. He didn't have Free to Laugh Now, but he had several products and things he had done under Free to Laugh Now. And he said, oh, just use it. He said, go ahead and use it. Who cares, man? We've become friends.
Wow, that's cool of him. Rather than saying, hey, I'll give you $100 for it, you know?
Right. So that's where that moniker came from. And whenever I'm on the air, I like to say something like this. Chris Rossetti in San Francisco, Free to Laugh Now. Free to Laugh Now because I've been set free from 30 years of depression. And that means you should never give up hope, because if I can be set free from 30 years of depression, your miracle must be just around the corner. So that's the whole moniker thing that it's evolved to.
How was the adjustment period for your wife particularly, but also your kids as it pertains to especially the scooter, but also, you know, your wife seeing how you evolved into releasing your depression?
Well, my wife, and by the way, coming up on 37 years of marriage in May.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. My wife, of course, would acutely be aware of the difference. She would acutely be aware of the difference. The children at different stages. My children are 9 years apart. So my son was a young boy when I was depressed. You know, he experienced me as a depressed dad and as a set free from depression dad. So we would really have to ask him, and I don't think I ever have, you know, what's the difference? We have this unchangeable, unquestionable love for each other. All of my family, my son, my daughter, my wife, and I, we all have this unquestionable.
I think you set the tone for that without knowing them. I think you set the tone for that, Chris.
Yeah, we have this love for each other, which is beyond depression, mobility scooters, et cetera. My daughter was three. She just turned three when I was set free from depression. So she's known me mostly as the post-depressive dad. But I would say we'd have to talk to them, and they'd probably all come up with the same answer. That, oh, he's dead. You know, mm-hmm. He's dead. He's goofy and he's dead.
How about the mobility scooter as it pertains to your wife? Obviously, I think she was supportive of you gaining mobility, but was that a difficult adjustment for her as well, having to deal with this large piece of equipment everywhere?
What's amazing about this mobility scooter, and I'm not going to plug the company unless you want me to, but what's amazing about the mobility scooter?
Plug them. What's the name of the company? They've done you well.
Pride Mobility Scooters. The model I have is called the Victory Scooter. This mobility scooter, it's big enough to accommodate me. Okay, I'm a larger person. As a matter of fact, when I got the scooter and I went back to the swimming pool, I was able to ride to the swimming pool. By the way, this thing has a range of about 2 to 4 miles and battery life of a couple, 2 to 4 hours, depending on how far and how fast you go. So I go shopping. I do all kinds of stuff. I'm very active. I do film shoots. I put the camera and the tripod on it, and I go do filming. It's very versatile. But when I went to the pool one day, I posted a picture of myself at the pool on the scooter saying how happy I was for the scooter, thanking Pride Mobility for supplying the scooter, and how thrilled I was to be back in the pool again. Someone commented and said, look at that fat guy on the scooter. He would need that if he would just lose some weight. What a jerk or something. Real derogatory comment. And so it taught me several lessons. One, how to react to negative comments. And two, I don't care what people say. And what's amazing was, Danny, is despite the negative content of his comment, I kept my mouth shut. And everybody else on the post attacked the poor person and said, leave the man alone. You have no clue what he's been through. And I think that's the key with all of us, Danny, is we don't know what's going on behind the smile. We don't know what's going on behind the frown. So I think a little compassion would go a long way to help us all, you know, when it comes to understanding each other.
You mentioned denial before. What would you say to a listener of this show who has a disability, but if they're being honest with themselves, is in denial of that disability? What would be your advice to that individual?
My advice would be get help. Don't hide. The biggest thing that depression or any other kind of disability drives a person to is to try to hide and deny. And so get help. Don't deny. Don't hide. Go to trusted people in your life whose only motive is to see you better. Go to professionals. Get professional diagnoses. And I always encourage people to pray. I mean, along with medical treatments and along with counseling, get all of these things. Use all of the tools available. And just don't stop believing that tomorrow is going to be better. I remember my dad, when they were married, they were struggling and so forth, but they were both hardworking and really loved us and good providers for the family. I remember my dad, he used to manage an A&P store, and he would work so hard, 12, 15, 17 hours a day, and see him just working, working, working. And whenever I would tell him as a kid, Dad, I don't feel like cutting the grass. Dad, I don't feel like going to school. Dad, he would sit me down and give me the same speech, Danny. He would say, do you feel like it? No? And he'd say to me, do you think I feel like getting up before the sun and going to work and dealing with idiots all day? He'd say, do you think I feel like it? He would go through this whole list of things about, do you think I feel like doing this? He said, no, I don't feel like any of it, but I do it because I love you kids. Now get up. So that's the 60s version of motivational.
Right.
You can do it. He would just say, it's got nothing to do with feeling. Just do it.
Well, I kind of like that because it takes us out of our own head about our disability. It's like sometimes we can overfeel things, right? And then we're in our own head. At some point, we just got to do it and get help.
Don't hide, man. Don't hide. Seek help of all, you know, just seek help. And be sure you seek good help. Like I said earlier, don't just go to anybody. And especially, can I just say this? This is just a personal viewpoint. Don't spill all the beans on social media. Don't just lay it all out there, every intimate detail of your life. Why? Because generally, it's not going to result in anything good. Sometimes it may, but generally, it's best to keep some things close to the vest. So when I say don't hide, I also say don't overexpose. Does that make sense?
It does. I think it goes back to our comment earlier about a public persona and a private persona. Social media is like a highlight reel. What's the quote? Comparison is the thief of joy. And it's impossible to not view someone else's social media account and compare yourself to them. And that steals your own joy. I wish I had their amount of followers. I wish I had their beauty or their body or their this or their that. And at some point, we have to just realize it's a highlight reel. That person experiences sadness as well, but you're not going to see it on their social media page.
Exactly. In fact, you know how people post pictures of themselves and they've got the camera held high to get a good angle, you know, to get that good, you know what I'm saying, that better look, that beauty shot. So they got the camera way up high and they're looking up and they look thinner and better and whatever. I do that too. I use the Hubble telescope to get my profile pictures.
Well, you know what's funny is if we could look through, and myself included and, you know, present company included, if we could look through their camera reel, we would see the 50 to 60 outtakes that were not posted of the same shot. That's the best shot out of the 60 shots. We're all guilty of that.
And also sometimes when you get on social media and you want to air everything about your life, it's like you're opening yourself up for attacks from every other kind of thing that is just looking for fodder. You know, a lot of people like to feel better about themselves by making people feel worse about themselves. So that's what I mean too. Be cautious about groups that just, you know, really have no interest other than pushing themselves their own agendas at your expense.
There's what, two guarantees in life? Taxes, and what's the other one? I think there's three. Haters. No matter what, there's going to be haters. And I'm aware of that launching this show. There's going to be haters. I think it's just something that I have accepted. Anytime we put ourselves out there, you could have the most pure intentions and there's going to be haters. So to the haters, hey, thanks for making it this far in the show. Appreciate the boost.
Exactly. What's the old song referencing something? I remember, you know, my mind goes back to old songs occasionally and I'm thinking of something, a line in a song. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. Oh, I'm just a man whose intentions are good. Remember that?
Can we get a little, short little one line of a song? I love your singing voice. You got a little jingle you can take us out with here before I, you know.
Do you want it on key or off key?
A little bit of both. Any old commercial jingles you like?
Now there's where I could keep talking for days because I've always been the kind of guy that liked the commercials and I liked the announcers' voices. And contrary to popular belief, I've never worked a day in radio. I've heard all my life you should be in radio. I've won pizzas off radio stations. I've won t-shirts off radio stations. I have done comedy bits for radio stations, but I've never, ever worked a day in radio. However, I loved the commercials. When we'd get in the car as a kid and they'd have the commercials on, I'd tell Dad to turn up the commercials. And I loved announcers. I remember the Larry King Show. Do you remember the Larry King Show?
I do. Radio?
Mm-hmm. I used to listen to that. And I used to call in and do character voices with Larry King. I would tell him that I was Bubba calling from Big Dump, Arkansas. And he would say, Bubba's on the air. And I would just shoot him something, you know, off the hip. And we would kind of banter about. And he let me call in, you know, a few times with that crazy character that it was just fun. But I remember the announcer for that show was Fred Lowry. And so it used to go something like this. You're listening to the Larry King Show. That's 703-685-2177. Call now. We'll answer when it's your turn. And now here's Larry King.
Thank you, Fred Lowry.
If that's the actual phone number, kudos. Or did you just make up the phone number off the top of your head?
That's what's in my brain.
Wow. You should
try to call it right now.
Wow. Somebody call that number. Leave a note in the comments if you get somebody.
Yeah, yeah. 703-685-2177. It's probably some lady going, what? But I do know this. There's a lot of songs that have meant a lot to me in my life. And so you wanted a one-liner. Let me give it to you finally. I think it would have to be from a song by a group called Love Song. They were a 1960s and 70s group. Bunch of hippies strung out on drugs. They gave their hearts to God. And they started a group called Love Song. And they would sing in churches around the country. And they used to have different songs that they would sing in churches, as I mentioned. And one of them was, lend an ear to a love song, to a love song. Let it take you from the start. What can you hear in a love song? Ooh, a love song is what we truly need. As someone once said, I truly believe that the love of God is the most powerful thing we could ever experience.
You know, when we opened the show, I said you're one of the most genuine people I know, Chris. And I think our listeners would have to agree. You are a remarkable person. Thank you for your time today, bud.
Anybody willing to sing off key? Yeah, it's genuine.
Make sure to check out Chris at freetolaugh.com, freetolaugh@gmail.com. His Instagram handle is CJ Rossetti with periods after the C and the J. So C.J.Rossetti, R-O-S-S-E-T-T-I. He also has a professional voiceover page, all one word, Chris Rossetti VO at Instagram. Any other social media handles you want to plug real quick?
I do something, try to do it every day, Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific time on the Clubhouse app. It's Bible Reading for the Blind. And I've been doing that for over 3 years. And I take requests from people from around the world. And we've thoroughly enjoyed that. So it's not just for people who are blind. It's not just for people who are Christians. One of the best compliments I ever got was just the other day in a social media room. Someone said, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in God, but I really enjoy his room.
And that's the highest compliment you could ever get for that room.
Yeah, I invite everybody to come join me if you can on Clubhouse. And we just casually sit back and I read verses, and I try to make it interesting and try to use inflection and character voices to make the word come alive.
How would they find you on Clubhouse? What's your handle? Or
Chris Rossetti is my name, and you can find me Chris Rossetti on Clubhouse, or you can find the room. It's called Bible Reading for the Blind. Bible Reading, the number four. It's the number four. Bible Reading for the Blind. And like I said, it's open for everybody.
Ladies and gentlemen, hailing from San Francisco, our on-site reporter, Chris Rossetti. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate your time, bud.